Hey, and welcome to another season of the Frank Reactions podcast on customer experience, the show where we help you profit from the digital era through better customer experiences online and off. My name is Tema Frank. This episode of Frank Reactions is being recorded on January 9th, 2017, and today we've got an interview with Michael Martino, who works in a major government agency. He asked that I not mention which one during the day, and he hosts his own podcast in the evenings. Before we get to the interview, though, I want to apologize for having disappeared for the past few weeks. I think I mentioned in my last episode at the end of November that I was going to be doing a digital detox for a couple of weeks. We went to a tiny fishing village in Mexico that was so small it didn't even have a store, let alone internet connections. I had planned to set up a few previous episodes for you to listen to while I was gone, but it didn't happen. Sorry about that. I'm back now and well rested, and I'm looking forward to kicking off a new year of Frank Reactions. This is episode 94, so just 6 more till we hit the big 100. I hope you had a relaxing holiday period too. I highly recommend doing a digital detox for a week or two every year. I'd really suggest 2 weeks if you can possibly manage it, because if you're like me, the first week is kind of hard. You're basically going through withdrawal. But by the second week, you've rediscovered what life can be like when you have leisure time, when you don't have people constantly chirping at you, sending you emails asking you to do things, or making you feel the peer pressure of Facebook to show everybody how wonderful your life is. You can read novels, go for random walks, chat and play games with your family, and I mean real face-to-face chat, visit real friends in person, and tune out and have a nap whenever the heck you feel like it. It's a great way to get the creative juices flowing again. And I have a plea to all those of you who have staff. Please stop sending them email and text messages after hours. If something's really urgent, phone them. But this always-on thing just isn't good for you or them. Look, I'm an entrepreneur, and like most entrepreneurs, I find it almost impossible to tear my mind and body away from work. So, yes, I do answer emails at night and on the weekend, but I don't expect you, especially those of you who work in paid jobs, to answer me right away. And your boss shouldn't expect that either. I also don't have emails pop up on my computer screen or phone even during the day. I check my email every few hours because there's so much evidence showing that letting it interrupt you wastes a ton of time, because our brains take several minutes to refocus on what we were doing before the interruption. Our minds need time to recharge and refresh. We need time to focus. You'll get better work and more creativity out of your workers if they aren't always feeling work pressure. In fact, there are now tools that you can use that let you schedule emails so that even if you've typed them at night when it was on your mind, they won't actually go to your employees until the next morning, so they don't feel the pressure to reply right away. Because even if you tell them, no, I don't expect you to answer right away, the fact is, if you send it at night, they're probably going to think that you really do want them to reply right away. So in terms of tools that let you do that scheduling, a couple of suggestions. HubSpot's free CRM tool does it. And so does a tool that I really love called Active Inbox that works with Gmail. And I'm sure there are plenty of other such tools. So that's my New Year's rant. Now let's get to the show. As regular listeners know, I like to do jargon alerts if my guests slip into jargon. So here are a few terms that you might not know, although many of you I'm sure do. First, ethnographic research or ethnography, which is basically following users around in their natural habitat, watching what they actually do. And in the interview, Michael talks a bit about how his organization did it. Now, it can be expensive because, you know, you're basically got one person following one person for hours or days at a time, but it is probably the most realistic in-depth research that you can currently do with humans. Another term that was mentioned was AHT, or average handle time, which is how long on average a call center rep is on the phone with a customer. And part of the problem with call center customer service is that there's a lot of pressure put on reps to keep the calls short. But short doesn't always get the problem resolved. So they've got this sort of conflicting pressure on the one hand to satisfy the customer, on the other hand to be quick. And we talk a bit about this tension in the interview. Another term that you may have heard or may not have is personas. And a persona is basically a made-up character who's been fleshed out as though they were a real person, and they represent one of your target markets. And you give them a name, a family, friends, work, know where they live, what their likes and dislikes are, and what they look for in products or services like yours. It helps the team visualize who they're actually designing for and who the system needs to work for, and can be very helpful in keeping people focused as they're developing new tools or new websites or new anything for customers. Personas can be very useful, but I often see a huge mistake, which is people just making them up based on their assumptions about what their customers are like. If your personas aren't based on solid market research, they're not going to be very useful. And in fact, they can really lead you astray. And the last thing I wanted to mention that he touched on briefly in the interview is the Amazon Go store. If you haven't heard about it, just go to Google and search Amazon Go, and you'll find a video explaining it as well as some articles. It was started in Seattle last month. And basically what it is a store where you check in with your phone as you're entering the store, and then you just wander through the store picking items off the shelf, put them in your handbag or whatever, and leave. No checkouts. The technology monitors what you've taken, and it automatically bills your credit card. This is yet another example of what I talked about in PeopleShock, of where humans are being replaced by technology, but given that most stores still haven't even got self-checkouts to work reliably, I think it will be a while till this rolls out beyond Amazon's test store. In fact, they've admitted that for now they've actually got humans hiding in the background overseeing the computers and correcting their mistakes. But that said, it is coming down the line. One quick warning before we get on with the episode. Unfortunately, there were some sound quality issues. You'll find that if you listen to the first little bit, you'll get used to the background in listening to Michael's voice, but it will take a little bit of getting used to. Sorry about that. Now, let's get on to the interview with Michael Martino.
Hi, my name is Michael Martino, and I work for a government agency. In my 9-to-5, I'm responsible for, and me and my team are responsible for re-engineering the government customer experience and its service delivery. So that's briefly what I do in my day job and in my 5-to-9. See what I did there. I'm the co-host of the 5-to-9 podcast, and that's where we try and help people with their side gigs. And I actually find it super beneficial. So if anybody knows anything about kind of a celebrity on the internet called Gary Vaynerchuk.
Yeah.
Gary V. He talks a lot about clouds and dirt. And what I do in my day job is a lot about being in the clouds. So strategy, business modeling, research. And then what I do in my 5-to-9 is a lot about being in the dirt. So a lot about tactics and using social and doing those things that keep me kind of grounded and doing the work, as opposed to just staying up in the clouds and the strategy. Because I find a lot of times when you do that, you forget what works and what doesn't. So that's briefly a little bit about myself.
Okay, so I understand that working for the government, you can't be too specific, but can you give me an idea of how large an agency it is that you work with?
Yep. There's a government agency that I work with. We're in Ontario, Canada. We're about 5,000 strong. We have three major customer groups, and the biggest customer group would be employers or companies in Ontario. We are spread across 14 cities. We have offices as far away as 2 or 3 hours up north, like a 2 or 3 hour flight. And but mostly Toronto is the hub of where we work.
What inspired or inspires the government or your part of the government to actually even care about customer experience?
Ooh, good question. So the government, they really have two pressures coming at them. So one is they have shrinking budgets, really in a complex world, and rising citizen expectation. So for citizens, and I'll just use that as the broad term, when they see places like Starbucks and Banana Republic and Best Buy, and over this holiday season, if you've anybody who's into reading stuff like this, I think it was the highest online buying. So for those citizens, they don't see a difference. They expect that level of experience that they deal with the private sector with the public sector. So it's not good enough anymore to say, well, we're the government, so we're not going to do anything. That's not good enough. And as far as we get surveys and things like that, we hear it's loud and clear in everything that we're hearing that it's not good enough. And I think for those of us in the public sector, we feel it's not good enough. So there is a big push to, like, are we ever going to be Amazon? No. But we can try and move the needle on moving away from traditional channels and a traditional service delivery to a much better experience.
Now, government by its nature is bureaucratic and has a lot of people who have a bureaucratic outlook. How the heck do you get them to even buy into this notion of some pretty radical change in the way things are done and how your users or customers are perceived?
Well, I think we've seen it in other countries. So in the UK, their digital transformation is something that everyone in government looks to. So unfortunately, after Brexit, that team has been decimated. Everyone's leaving, but they did a tremendous job of influencing people within the government service to be better. So I'm going to take a roundabout answer to your question. So we went out this summer and we spoke to, we did 50 ethnographic interviews with our employer base. And not one of them said that the service was poor from an employee perspective. It was always, your procedures really suck.
Right.
And it wasn't that your people are rude and they don't help. That's far from it. It's, they have to jump through these hoops. So why don't you just go fix those procedures or try and fix your service delivery?
Yeah.
So I think it's a little bit of a misconception that in the government service, people don't want to change. I think there's a lot of change. The right direction needs to be given to them and they'll do it. Most of the people are empathetic for sure. So it's more changing how to do the work instead of who's doing the work.
It's interesting actually that you say that. A couple of years ago, I interviewed someone in transformation with the government of Saskatchewan, and her comment was they wanted civil servants to be able to feel pride in the service aspect again. Yeah. And that civil servants wanted to feel pride. It was just that they'd been browbeaten by these awful procedures for so long.
Yeah. There's a good example of, there's been a few comments and we heard it that your people are really good on the phone, but it always seems that they want to get us off the phone. And so that's a direct link to AHT. There's an average handle time that people need to, and this is for every company that strive towards. And when people start seeing that number come up, the great service they've given, they're like, oh, I got to hit my AHT, so I have to get this person off the phone. And that's where we see this feedback. And so it's not the person who just wants to get off the phone. It's this policy of AHT, which happens across, it happens in insurance companies and in banks.
So how do you go about changing things like that then?
So I think it's telling the story. Telling that customer experience story through, and I think the big one is we've had CSAT forever, and that's never really moved the needle. These 50 ethnographic interviews where we spent about 150 hours with our customer base, they first told us the story of their life, just working from when they got up to when they went to bed. Mm-hmm. And then they told us a year in the life of them working with our agency. Mm-hmm. And then we overlaid those two journeys, mm-hmm. and showed the amount of effort we make people to go through. So for me, customer experience is customer effort, trying to make it an effortless experience. So the story is, here's all the effort that we put people through. What's our end vision of what an effortless experience looks like? And then let's reverse engineer that to create those initiatives. So it's really telling the story of the customer from the customer's point of view. And then once everyone's bought into that, getting that vision and reverse engineering all the projects you have to do to get to that vision.
Right. So what are the barriers that you find typically to actually getting to that vision?
For any big company, but I guess for large agencies, it's kind of turning a oil tanker. We keep saying it's trying to turn an oil tanker in the ocean.
Yeah.
And so as much as we talk about customer experience and the experience, there's still all these pockets within the company that just tries to do something that doesn't meet that vision. So that's one barrier. Trying to rally everyone behind one vision and saying, here's the only things we're going to work on because this is what's the most important to the customer.
Right.
The second one is, I think it's money. And it's, if you create a better customer experience, let's say for Banana Republic, and then you get more sales, you could then get that money and then go back and keep working on that experience. So what's the next set of initiatives? But in the government service, there's not that. We have the same amount of money coming in. So to tell the story of saying, okay, I know we've been working on these traditional channels for like 100 years.
Right.
So we're gonna spend five times the money this year, and we're gonna move away from everything we've ever known, like phone, fax, and mail, courier pigeon. We're gonna move away from that. We're gonna spend a boatload of money that we're gonna have to explain to the government.
Yeah.
We're gonna move to all these new channels.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to give everyone a better experience, and that's going to help with their journey through our company.
Mm-hmm.
That ROI it's really a soft ROI. It's not like, oh, we've made $10 million and now we can reinvest that. We have the same amount of money coming in. So to outlay this money is a hard sell. That's the hard sell. It's really on, instead of saying we're going to sell more, it really becomes more altruistic, and that's a hard sell.
Now, in some cases, you can actually make things more efficient, which will lower costs, but that's hard to show in the short run, I guess.
Yeah. So when we go through the process, and this is for across all the government, from federal all the way down to municipal, when you see where the biggest effort is for a citizen,
mm-hmm.
that's also your most inefficient process.
Yeah.
And so if you were to fix that, then their effort would go down, but your inefficiency would go down. But making that tie directly is hard to do.
Right.
Another big barrier is the data needed. We're all probably on all antiquated systems. Those customer experience metrics that all the top companies have, like Amazon,
yeah,
we don't have those. We spend a lot of time stitching together the story.
Okay. So it means you've got to be really thoughtful too then about what data is in fact going to deliver the most value to you.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think the other one is, we'll go to your book, People Shock. Get customers so happy they're selling for you.
Yeah.
So today I was at the mall because I've been on 2 weeks vacation, mm-hmm. and I was in Sports Check. So I walked right by Nike and Adidas and Reebok and right to Under Armour.
Mm-hmm.
Because Under Armour is my brand, because I I identify most with Under Armour, not only their for their experience, but the people they have as brand ambassadors. And so if anybody asks me what I want, I say Under Armour. And if anybody asks me what the best thing to get for the sport for him, I'll say Under Armour. So I'm selling for them.
Right.
That word of mouth, no one ever says, you should really check out the CRA. They're awesome. Right?
CRA, for my non-Canadian listeners, is Canada Revenue yes. Agency, like the IRS.
Same as the IRS. The government's not a brand people identify with,
mm-hmm.
and they don't want to. Like you, I really don't. It's not like I'm following any of the government on Twitter or Instagram. Well, why would you, right?
Right.
That's
they're as entertaining as Donald Trump.
Yes.
Follow them to get your blood pressure up.
That's right.
So then it comes back to that challenge of making the hard sell. So what kind of evidence do you use to make that sell? I mean, you've done your ethnographic interviews, so you get a lot of evidence from that we're simply not meeting the needs of our audience. Yep. Is that the kind of thing then that you rely on?
So we rely on CSAT. So we have CSAT running all the time. We also have, for our online services, we have transactional customer effort score. So that is the big one because it's in real time and it's right after a transaction. We see that people that are the most, that exert the least amount of effort are the most satisfied.
How do you measure that?
We just ask them. Yeah. So the customer effort score is, how easy did we make resolving your issue today?
Mm-hmm.
When they answer that, we match that up with how satisfied they are with the service that they use. You see right off the bat that effort, and this is, you can use this in private industry, absolutely. Effort is a predictor of satisfaction and loyalty. No one wants to spend a whole bunch of time doing whatever you want them to do, especially in the government service.
So do you ask both questions then right after a transaction? That ease one and
So we ask a whole bunch of questions because we're the government. And we have to ask a whole bunch of questions. But yes, we do ask both a satisfaction, overall satisfaction, and effort.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you find that there have been declining response rates?
No.
Okay.
What's funny is no one wants to be a brand ambassador, but our customers want to help make things better. So when we went out and did these interviews with our customer base, they all said, what we want to do is partner with you to make whatever changes you want to make. Use us to help you get there. So in terms of declining, no. They say, why do you keep asking if you're not going to do anything, which is one thing. But on the flip side, we are now building an employer, like a customer community of the people that said, yes, we want to help. And we've already started with some of our online services. We've gone back out to them to do some usability testing and usability testing the whole interaction. So from when they get a letter to when they have to go online, to when they have to complete the transaction.
Yeah.
And when we say we're going back out, we're like at 100% response rate. So when we call someone and say, can we go out? Yes.
Nice.
Or if they say no, they'll say, this is not a right time. Can you give us 2 weeks? So as opposed to this adversarial relationship that most people think with the government, it's not true. People just want to be listened to. And we're seeing that a lot, that if you just listen to us and build it for how we'll need it, mm-hmm. then we'll be more than happy and the experience will be better for them and the efficiency will be better for us.
Right. And it's interesting because even in, whether it's government or private sector, customers have an emotional investment in your organization. They want you to succeed, in mm-hmm. this case, because it also helps them. If you make things mm-hmm. better, it'll make things better for them. In a private company context, if you don't succeed, then they'll lose access to whatever it is that they've chosen to buy.
For sure.
So we sometimes forget that. We just start to think of them as adversaries when they shouldn't be.
No, and you see lots of companies that have an advocacy group. So people that are advisors that are just customers that who are willing to help them make things better, be it a service or a transaction.
Yeah.
My team spends a lot of time not even in the office. Over the last 2 years, I've barely seen most of my team because they have been traveling across the province, either helping customers use our online services or doing ethnographic research or doing usability testing. So,
well, and that's great that they're doing it out in the field, that they're doing it in a real world environment.
Yeah. We used to bring people in, and then when we launched the service, all these problems popped up, and then everyone from senior management down kind of turned to us and said, didn't you test this? We did, but it's in a lab and they're focused and people aren't coming to talk to them. And so when you give them a scenario and they run through it.
I got to give you this great experience, actually. I did some consulting at one point for another government that they had their internal usability testing lab and they thought this thing had succeeded and everything was good. But they were still using, all the government computers were still on an older version of Windows than 90% of the public had.
Yeah.
And it didn't work on the more recent version.
Yes.
So, yeah, classic example.
So when you set up the your prototype to work exactly the way it's supposed to work on only the software that you have, sure, it's going to work. But when you're out in the field and you're actually using their computer, that's when you're going to know where the bugs are. So super important.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, you have no idea how it thrills me to hear you talking about usability, because I set up a company in 2001 called Web Mystery Shoppers to do remote usability testing from people's own computers. And of course, in those days, it was just so early, people didn't get it.
Right.
So it's nice to see the progress we've made there. So, Michael, what are the biggest challenges that you have faced in trying to move forward? I mean, you've talked about one being simply, how do you justify it from a financial perspective? What about things like internal silos? Are there other issues as well that you've had to deal with?
So for many years, we've had to deal with internal silos. So there has been a change up and down the organization that customer experience is one of the three or four most important things that we need to do.
Okay.
And so that barrier is completely gone away. In the past, it has been, so I grew up in user experience. That's actually my background, wireframing, usability testing. So I used to have a boss that always said that the government service was like a bunch of warring rats with their own fiefdom, which I always giggled at, but it's somewhat true. It's if you can't rally everyone, and this is also in the private sector. If you can't rally everyone around a common vision, then what happens is money and resources flow to initiatives that are not going to move you forward in your customer experience. So that in the past has always been our biggest problem. That here's the number one thing we have to work on, and then when you finally sell that business case, we get to a point where IT doesn't have enough people. There's not enough people in the business because there's an app here that's going on, or this initiative is happening and it's not a coordinated effort. So the most important thing that we have done is created a governance committee around the customer experience. So it's a governance committee that just focused on customer experience, and anything outward facing needs to go through this governance committee, and the governance committee is going to set the vision and then set those initiatives. And I think that's the most to overcome any hurdle. And the governance committee is across all silos, like it's across the organization. So everyone is in the room and they're only decision makers. You can't have someone who's not a decision maker. And so I think that is breaking down the most silos and getting the customer experience the traction that it needs. When you talk about customer experience, it's not giving people a warm and fuzzy feeling. It's your whole business model and how you're going to conduct yourself in business. I'll go back to Amazon. So one of the first things we did was show the new Amazon Go store.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not familiar with it, go on YouTube and just type in Amazon Go. And it talks about this store that took them 4 years to build. And so I showed that video not because we're going to do anything close to that or Amazon, but it's to show that to get to that vision or to get to that store, you got to buy into that vision. And all the other initiatives need to go away. And any quick win or anything moving forward needs to be able to support that vision. And if it's not supporting that vision, then it's not a project that anybody should be taking on.
We're running out of time. Is there anything else that you'd like to mention or wish I had asked you?
I think I'll just talk about channels.
Okay.
So omnichannel has been super hot for a long time. And I think this year a lot of people have been talking about just because you go digital, it's not some sort of panacea that you're going to start saving money and live agents can go away and stores can go away. That's not going to happen. I think that's was a huge misconception in the government service also. Once we go digital, then we don't need like a call center.
Right.
In fact, you need the same level, if not more. So it's not about getting rid of channels. For example, in the government service, most of the jobs happen on the phone. So transactions, issue resolution, just talking to people, that is all phone.
Yeah.
And everybody wants to channel shift someone to another channel. But unless you have what this new channel is going to take away from the traditional channels, you can't just say we're going to lower our phone channel use. And so I think you need to talk about what job does every channel need to do.
Right.
Before you talk about reducing or move or channel shifting some citizens somewhere.
Right.
And digital is not the panacea.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. Certainly a well-designed website is going to take away a lot of phone calls for simple requests for information. And I think that stuff's probably already been done in most organizations. But when people call, often it's because of complexity.
Yeah.
And you can't simply remove the human contact for that yet.
I think I have one more.
Okay.
I'm a big proponent of customer personas, obviously my usability background.
Yeah.
But I think personas are important for any company, any walk of life. So not only for the government service and not only for like the Banana Republic, but also for if you're an entrepreneur, there's no way you can know what the next service is or what your business model should be without a persona to go back to and bounce things. Like would Sally want what my next vertical should be?
Mm-hmm.
Is Sally okay with the services I'm delivering now? So spending some time to work on like empathy mapping and customer profiles is super important. Doesn't matter if you're an entrepreneur in the private sector or in public sector.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Great. Well, thank you so much for your time. This is, I think, a great way to kick off the year.
Awesome.
It's nice to see government organizations moving in the right direction. So thank you.
Michael made the point near the end of the interview that we shouldn't be misled into thinking that digital will eliminate the need for other channels. And he's quite right, certainly for the next few years. But what I find interesting is to think about how quickly we get seduced into using new channels and automation. And when they work well, they really do make our lives more convenient, which is a good thing. But I do worry a little bit about how we're giving up any hope of privacy in the process. And I worry about the concentration of power in the hands of just a small number of huge companies. I read the book The Circle by Dave Eggers over the holiday. Now, from a literary point of view, I don't think it was all that well written, but it does do a great job of showing some of the dangers of what we're so freely giving to the likes of Google and Facebook, and how even a company whose mantra is to do no evil can end up doing evil with the best of intentions. Really interesting point that it makes, and it makes it pretty well. So I'd suggest you check that book out. It's a quick read. I'll have a link to it, as well as to the Effortless Experience book that Michael mentioned, which is one of the best customer experience books I've read recently. So I'll put those on the show notes page. So tune in again next week. And if you haven't already subscribed to the podcast or to the Frank Ideas newsletter, why not do it today? That way you'll be sure never to miss an episode, even when I get a little unreliable, which I really try not to do. And from time to time, if you're a Frank Ideas reader, there are actual special bonuses just for you. As always, I would love to hear your feedback and suggestions, ideas for people you'd like me to interview or topics you'd like me to cover. So if you've got any ideas, just send me a tweet to @TemaFrank, T-E-M-A, M as in marketing. So T-E-M-A-F-R-A-N-K. Or you can send me an email, Tema@frankreactions.com. You can also find me on LinkedIn, and the Frank Reactions Facebook page is another route you can take. I'd love to hear from you, and I hope you have a wonderful week. Bye.